Hello, and welcome to the Arts in Conversation, presented by the National Arts Club. I am your host, Robert Yonner. For those who are not familiar with the club, we're a 501c3 nonprofit based in New York City with the mission to stimulate, foster, and promote public interest in the arts. Annually, the club offers more than 153 programs to the public, including exhibitions, theatrical and musical performances, lectures, and readings. At the National Arts Club, we celebrate artists from all art forms. On today's episode, we are exploring the world of dance with the iconic and celebrated Misty Copeland.
Dance became this, like, fairy tale escape. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced, and I developed so much confidence by being a part of it.
2023 has been a remarkable anniversary year for the National Arts Club, and we've all enjoyed so much going back in time, looking at the club's history, the people that created the club, the people that have made the club what it is today. It's been a very exciting experience. Dance has always had a very strong presence at the National Arts Club, going back as far as 1903, when the modern dance pioneer Loie Fuller exhibited her personal collection of Rodin bronzes at the National Arts Club. Other dance masters, American dance masters that have been honored at the National Arts Club include Agnes DeMille, Cynthia Gregory from American Ballet Theatre, Paul Taylor, Judith Jamison, and Kevin McKenzie. In the early 1990s, in what many people consider the golden age of what was known as downtown dance, the National Arts Club hosted a performance series of New Dance, which featured soloists from the Eric Hawkins Dance Company, Laura Dean, Paul Taylor, and Martha Bowers Dance Theater, etc. That was a very exciting period in dance in New York City and throughout the country. People were challenging notions of dance, notions of performing, finding new values in movement, how that can be enhanced by the spoken word, by new music. It was truly a great time of discovery and so much remarkable talent. Talented people, talented dancers were able to flourish under these new ideas. I'm particularly excited for this conversation with Misty Copeland. Misty is a ballet dancer for American Ballet Theatre, one of the leading classical ballet companies in the United States. In 2015, Copeland made history by becoming the first African-American woman to be a principal dancer in ABT's 75-year-old history. She is also a New York Times best-selling author. Her new book, The Wind at My Back, Resilience, Grace, and Other Gifts from My Mentor, Raven Wilkinson, came out just last year. Let's join Misty and our producer, Emily, in their conversation now.
Misty, thank you so much for joining us. Can we start with a little bit about your background? What was your childhood like? What was your relationship with dance as a young person?
So I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. We moved to Los Angeles, to California, when I was just 2 years old. But my mother was actually a professional cheerleader for the Kansas City Chiefs football team. She was, I think, one of the youngest members of the team to ever, you know, dance. So she grew up dancing. There was a lot of music and dancing in my household. And it became this way of communicating for my family. There wasn't a lot of communication, like verbally, or nurturing us in how to express ourselves and what it was we were feeling or thinking. That just wasn't something that was nurtured in my household. And so music kind of became that way of communicating for all of us. I'd say around the age of 7, I started to create movement to music. I had no real example of what that was. I mean, the only dance I'd ever seen was in music videos on MTV and BET and VH1. And so that was my perception of what dance was.
When did you start to dance more seriously?
I started creating for like talent shows that I was in. And eventually, by the time I was 12, about 12 and a half, I decided I was going to audition for the drill team, the dance team of my middle school. I was, you know, going from elementary school into middle school, and they had like the best dance team in like Southern California. They'd won all these competitions, and my older sister was on that team. And but what was crazy was that I was so introverted. I mean, I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't really speak. And so my family was shocked when they found out that I wanted to audition for this dance team. And not only auditioned for the team, but I auditioned for the captain position. So I had to choreograph my own solo and learn a group dance number. And I was made captain. And I probably was like, you know, one of a handful of girls that didn't have any dance experience on the troupe. And it was from there that the drill team coach, Elizabeth Cantine, who is still very much in my life, she's my godmother, she saw talent in me, and she encouraged me to take ballet at the local Boys and Girls Club, where I was already a member. So it was around the age of 13 that I took my first ballet class on a basketball court at the Boys and Girls Club, where I was introduced to my first ballet teacher, Cynthia Bradley, who is also still very much a part of my life. I ended up training in ballet for only 4 years before I moved to New York and joined American Ballet Theater.
That is amazing. So far, you've mentioned two mentors, and that brings us to my next question. You've written several books, your most recent being The Wind at My Back, Resilience, Grace, and Other Gifts from my mentor, Raven Wilkinson. In it, you discuss your relationship with the trailblazer, Raven Wilkinson. For those who don't know, who was she?
Yes, Raven was the first Black ballerina to be given a contract with an elite major ballet company. She joined the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo in 1955. Ballet Russe was really one of the most important ballet companies of the 20th century that really brought ballet to America. Before there was American Ballet Theater, before there was New York City Ballet, and on and on. She was the first Black woman to join the company, the only Black woman. She ended up moving up to the position of soloist after only 2 years in the company, which to this day, you rarely see Black women beyond the court of ballet. So in that time, you know, it just really showed her incredible talent. Raven danced with the company for 7 years before, you know, there was a decision with the entire company really that was made that she was bringing too much attention to the company, and it wasn't safe. When the company toured through the South, which they did often in America, her life was being threatened by the KKK. You know, this was at the height of you know, segregation and Jim Crow. And she ended up moving to Amsterdam and dancing with the Dutch National Ballet for 10 years, which was, you know, really the case for a lot of Black artists in that time, you know, having to leave America and go to Europe to have a successful career. I feel like it's, you know, part of my responsibility being in this position and having the reach that I do to share her story and so many other Black dancers who've made such a big impact on this community.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal relationship with Raven?
So I learned about Raven in 2010. I had already been a soloist in ABT for, I guess, 2 or 3 years. And I was watching a documentary on the Ballet Russe to Monte Carlo. And I had no idea that there was ever a Black woman in that company. I didn't know there was a Black dancer, period, in that company. And it was so shocking when, you know, an hour and a half into this documentary, this elegant Black woman comes onto the screen and starts sharing her experience of dancing in the company. And it was like a career defining, life changing moment for me, just seeing someone who looked like me on the screen. You know, it was like so little had changed in the ballet world from the time that she was dancing in the company until where I was. You know, I mean, I was the only Black woman at ABT for the first decade of my career and was dealing with a lot of adversity and racism. I mean, clearly not to the extent that she was, but it just felt so paralleled, our experiences. And from that moment on, I was sharing as much as I could find about her story as possible in every interview that I was doing with anyone who would listen. And at one point, my manager, Gilda, started looking around and looking her up to see if she was alive and where she might live. And we found out that she was still alive and living in New York City. And she actually lived one block away from me on the Upper West Side. It was pretty serendipitous. We would eventually meet in 2011 at the Studio Museum in Harlem, where we were doing a conversation about two generations of Black ballerinas. So that was the very first time we met, was right before we took to the stage to have this conversation. From that moment on, she became a really close friend of mine. You know, we exchanged numbers. We would talk at least once a week for hours at a time. She would come to my performances. She shared with me that she had been coming to my performances and when I didn't even know who she was, and supporting me, and had followed my career since I was 15 years old when I was still in California. And she just became a unique type of mentor in my life. She was just this incredible support system for me. And, you know, it wasn't about her giving me corrections and feedback as a ballet dancer, but it was about her nurturing me as a human being.
Absolutely. You say in your book that your journey would have been impossible without Raven's career, her example, her love, and friendship. Can you speak on how mentorship has impacted your life? What's the importance of mentorship?
Yeah. I mean, I say this often to young people that, you know, I think that, you know, there are moments where we just feel like it's a weakness if we need guidance or support in any way, or that, you know, that we can do this on our own. Yes, we have the strength, and, you know, a lot of us have the will to be able to persevere through so much, but everyone needs a support system. And through every aspect of my career, every person that has mentored me has played such a pivotal role in my life and my career. You know, decisions that I may have made that could have completely changed the trajectory of my career. And I had people in my life that kind of kept me focused and kept me on track and believed in me. And to me, that is so important, to have someone who supports you and believes in you. And it's going to be there for you to encourage you when you feel that you just don't have the strength to do it on your own.
Now, you were the first African-American female principal dancer at American Ballet Theatre. How has that experience impacted your life since?
You know, it's like a unique experience to be the first, to be a part of an art form that was literally not built for you to exist in. It's made me even stronger, I guess, than I already was. And I say that because I feel like I had, just by watching my mom, I had a unique experience of what that means to be a single mother, raising six children, and the strength that, you know, she showed. And, you know, we didn't often have a place to stay, didn't have a home or food on the table, and she never, like, gave up. That was a strength that was instilled in me that I think helped me within my own career. But yeah, I mean, it's like I've gone through so many iterations of, like, you know, of myself and what it means to be Black within this field. And I think that what I've learned is that it's so important for me to share my experiences. I think that it will help not only, you know, the community of the ballet world who haven't been as inclusive and put forth the efforts to bring more diversity to this art form. The more that you speak and the more that you share, the more that people can understand your perspective, and the more that you can kind of hold them responsible for the things that they need to be doing. So it's been lonely. It's been a beautiful experience to be able to bring more people into this art form because they see representation. It's been really difficult, but it's also been really rewarding.
Over your career, have you seen the landscape for Black ballet dancers change at all? Is it still a work in progress?
It's definitely a work in progress. I would say the most change that I've seen has been since the pandemic. since the murder of George Floyd. You know, I'm so proud of so many Black dancers that are getting opportunities now at this point, and not just at American Ballet Theater, but Pacific Northwest Ballet promoted two Black dancers recently, one to principal and one to soloist. The fact that we have Janet Rolais came on board as executive director at American Ballet Theater, Black woman. There's been a lot of acknowledgement, a lot of giving these dancers an opportunity to prove themselves. It's been a very important time, I think, to give Black dancers a platform and a voice to, again, share what their experiences have been. And to me, that shows such strength that we have stuck it out in this art form with all of the adversity that we've dealt with, because we believe in the art form and we have a passion for it, is what's so incredible about it. And it doesn't matter what color you are and where you come from and your socioeconomic background, it's the power of the arts and the power of music and the power of dance.
Now, I'm going to transition a little bit here. Can you share with us your journey with confidence?
Yeah, I'd say that starting out in dance, that was where the first and only place I'd experienced being confident. It's kind of backwards. When a lot of people think about, I didn't have like the typical childhood and upbringing of someone who was a part of this elite art form. And dance became this like safe space for me. I had no confidence in any part of my life. I had a lot of shame around, you know, what was happening in my home life, you know, whether it was abuse or being homeless. And dance became this like fairy tale escape. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced. And I developed so much confidence by being a part of it. I would kind of go through these lulls throughout my professional career. You know, when I joined ABT, you know, being alone and being the only Black woman, it definitely like chipped away at my confidence. But I think in the end, like it's always been those moments when I'm on stage and I feel this sense of escape and empowerment, that the confidence like comes back. It's like a renewal every time I step onto the stage in my confidence.
I love that. And for our final question, what are your hopes for the future of dance?
Oh, man. You know, I hope that it's something that, you know, to me, like dance is for the community. It's something that the community should be able to embrace and all communities should be able to embrace. Going through the pandemic, I think really made me step back and think about like, what is a theater? Like, what does that really mean? You know, when we didn't have theaters to perform in and we were looking at how we can bring dance to more people, you know, through streaming services or on YouTube and somehow over, you know, the internet. And I think there's so much power in changing the way that we think about what theater looks like. I think that we should be able to go to communities and just perform within those communities and bring that access and show people the beauty of what it is we do. It shouldn't just be about going into this institution where a lot of people don't feel like it's a place that they are represented or that they feel comfortable or that they belong. So my hopes are that we really think about how we can be inclusive in more creative ways, because this is an art form. There are more simple ways of bringing dance to more people, you know, whether it's through my foundation or whatever, the books that I'm writing, it's about bringing, and I know that these are like these buzzwords that everyone uses now, but it's like always been my goal and my mission, you know, to bring more diversity, equity, and inclusion to dance. And I'm going to continue to do that for as long as I'm alive.
Misty, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining, Misty. Misty's new book, The Wind at My Back, Resilience, Grace, and Other Gifts from My Mentor, Raven Wilkinson, is available everywhere. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Arts in Conversation. Future episodes will be released on the 15th of each month, so be sure to subscribe and listen next month for our next episode. The Arts in Conversation is produced by Emily Cherish from Cherish Sound. Cherish Sound produces branded podcasts for businesses. The Arts in Conversation is also produced by Nadine Heidinger from the National Arts Club. We look forward to having you with us again next month.